Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
This is Vincent Wall with you on News Talk's Taking Stock. We're joined now by Steve Dempsey, Product Director at Independent News and Media. Steve, you're very welcome and thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me on, Vincent.
Now, our regular review of what's been happening in the world of journalism and communications generally, in the technical sphere as well. And let's start with what I think Forbes has recently called the Great Cookie Countdown has begun. These cookies that we see every time we open a website and asking us to accept the fact that they're there, little algorithms that basically track our journey through various websites and give that information to advertisers. They're about to go, but they may be replaced by something else.
Exactly. I will try really hard to avoid any cookie crumbling puns here. So please call me on it if I stumble into this. I mean, I think this is quite an important thing, and it seems to be happening in the background. So most people who are technically aware of how the internet works know that this has been happening for a while, but the interesting thing is what cookies will be replaced with, I guess. So, you know, overall, why is it important? Overall, online ads are worth around $300 billion per annum, and they pay for services like Twitter and Facebook and lots of free news sites that don't have subscription. And this is the fabric that's being torn apart. So that's why it's important. And like you say, the cookie is a small file that helps advertisers and social media companies track you around the news. It's been on the way out for a while. So Safari and Firefox, the app, the browsers owned by Apple and Mozilla, turned off third-party cookies by default last year, and I think even the year previously in the case of Firefox. But now what's changing things really is that Google has weighed in, and it's kind of saying, right, here's how we're going to handle this. So obviously, when Google sneezes, everyone in digital marketing gets a cold. So this is a big deal. What they've announced is that they're going to stop using any tracking technologies and investing in making their own tracking technologies that uniquely identify web users as they go around their business on the internet. So what their focus now is very much on what they're calling a privacy sandbox. And these are methods of targeting ads without collecting any information about the individuals. As ever with big tech, they have come up with some deeply irritating acronyms to describe these, and they've decided on a load of bird themed acronyms in this case. So there's PIGEON, which stands for private interest groups including noise. There's Pelican, private learning and inference for causal attribution, and there's Turtledove, but I can't remember what that one's for. And the most prominent ones, and the ones that seems to be closest related to the cookie, is called the Flock. Flock stands for Federated Learning of Cohorts. So the plan.
What the flock is that?
Yes, exactly. The plan is they're going to anonymize and aggregate your browsing activity into a behavioral label that can be shared with websites and advertisers. So unlike an individual cookie, this is more like a cookie jar into which advertisers will reach with their eyes closed. Their flocks will be generated algorithmically. If cohorts are too small, they'll be kind of lumped together so they reach a critical mass. So your flock will be recalculated based on your browsing habits once a week.
So let's wind that back a little bit, Steve. If Google does go for this flock option, effectively we won't be tracked on an individual basis anymore. So we won't get those individualized advertisements that follow us on our online behavior, but we'll be anonymously put into cohorts of up to perhaps a couple of thousand people who are defined or labeled by their behavior online. And that will give advertisers a different way into selling you stuff.
Exactly. I mean, it's less specific, but Google is saying it's almost as effective. So they're saying that based on trials, it's 95% as effective, but it's not tracking individual users and storing their information on servers. The kind of cohort work is done on your local browser, on your kind of local machine. So in theory, they're saying that we're not tracking you as individuals, we're tracking you all together, and we're not storing our information. We figured out a way of letting the information about you be stored on your device. So a lot of it is down to how much you trust Google and what they're saying here. And you know what? Not everyone does. The Irish Council for Civil Liberties said that there isn't enough information to judge whether this new system will end the kind of data free for all. A group called the Electronic Frontier Foundation said that Flock was the opposite of privacy and preserving technologies, and actually said it was open to some abuse because it could unwittingly create cohorts of people who may be vulnerable in some ways, like if a cohort of people who were visiting websites about substance abuse or surviving trauma or financial hardship. And this could be ways of actually in the same way as we see kind of misinformation spreading unwittingly, Google may have created or may be creating a way of targeting people at their most vulnerable here. And there's also concerns about Google's market dominance as well. So obviously, you know, Google has been accused in the past of monopolistic behavior. And in some ways, there's every chance that while they are trying to recreate the cookie, they're doing so in a way that very much favors them and would consolidate their power in terms of advertising on the open web.
And are the regulators going to have any participation in this optioneering program that Google has now set off on to replace cookies? Does it look like this will be purely down to Google's decision?
This is very much down to Google's decision on. So it's important to say, and I don't think I said it, that this will only currently will happen on Google's Chrome browser. So it's Google proposing a commercial solution to a problem. And in fairness, they are doing this, or they're saying they're doing this to overcome privacy issues that are increasingly the case due to the legislation like GDPR in Europe and the privacy regulations in Canada. So they are taking this step to comply with regulations. I don't think they need necessarily to get legislative buy-in in terms of what they're doing. Like everything in the murky world of ad tech, it's unclear. There's not a lot of detail currently. If you want, you can go into various kind of pages on GitHub and try and understand what they're proposing themselves. But there is not a lot of specific information here. It's not very clear exactly how this is going to work. And I think the Irish Council for Civil Liberties were spot on in calling that out, that it's very easy to say rather aspirational things about how your new system is going to work. But until somebody actually gets under the hood and tries to understand how it all hangs together, it's very difficult to understand whether they are legitimately addressing the privacy concerns.
And I presume they will point to the fact that people can, as they had the option with cookies, they will point to the fact that people will have the option to opt out. But most people will either ignore that or will, in the short term, buy into the deal that they get the Google service free on the basis that the service gets some data on them.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things is it could be the case that by opting out of a cohort, you may actually make your web experience worse. It's really not clear how the whole thing is going to work and where the unintended consequences lie. One of the big issues that I would have, notwithstanding all the very valid points about kind of privacy and market dominance, for me, the real problem with Flock is that it's trying to build an existing, it's making a lookalike for an existing system. It's not trying to improve it, it's just trying to recreate it. So we know there are huge issues with ad fraud. We know there are huge issues with the kind of murky supply chain in terms of online advertising. And I don't know if Flock is really doing anything to address any of those specific issues.
Interesting one to watch. Let's turn to Facebook, Steve. They seem not only to have grudgingly accepted the new scenario in Australia in terms of paying publishers for the use of some content, but to have actually run with the ball to some degree, particularly with News Corp.
I know, isn't it? I mean, good for Facebook, right? I mean, in fairness, I think Facebook got a bit of a hard deal here in terms of as a company, it can sometimes seem like Facebook is just Google without a PR wing. But in this instance, I think they got a bit of a bad rep. They took the decision to pull news from their platform in Australia following the launch of the new what was it called, the Digital Platforms Mandatory Bargaining Code Bill, and there's a mouthful. And in fairness, what they did made them compliant with the legislation. So for me, that there's one of the issues here is that, you know, bad legislation has bad outcomes. So you know, the Facebook was actually compliant. Now they roll back the decision. I think, as ever, they got a PR kickback for what they did. And now you're right; they're taking an extra step. And I think they're taking an extra step with News Corp, and that's exactly who they were supposed to take an extra step with. They've announced a 3-year agreement with Facebook, and they'll be paying them for Australian content The most interesting thing about this is aside from the rollout turning into the soap opera that it did, Robert Thompson, the CEO of News Corp, came out with a few zingers of lines welcoming the whole thing, and he said that it would have a material impact on the Australian business. He also praised his boss, Rupert Murdoch, and his son Lachlan, and he said, "Rupert and Lachlan led a global debate while others in our industry were silent or supine as digital dysfunctionality threatened to turn journalism into a mendicant order." I mean, what a great line.
if one was of a cynical point of view, Steve, does it look like perhaps the purpose of the Australian legislation to some degree might have been to force such a deal between the likes of Facebook and News International, which obviously is a big Australian presence and maybe well connected in Canberra?
Yeah, and again, I think if cynics may draw particular lines that may not be there, but there is something valid there. I mean, again, it's my personal opinion that it's not great legislation, and the real question here is, does the end justify the means? Because I think the end probably is correct, that there has been an imbalance of power, but in some ways, traditional media groups, I feel, should accept that the imbalance of power grew because they didn't fully understand the repercussions of what the internet brought and what would happen when they gave over all the distribution powers for their content to certainly online to the likes of Facebook and Google. So I do think that what we're seeing is probably a valuable redress of the balance. It is very interesting that while both Facebook and Google threatened to throw their toys out of the pram, neither of them did. Both of them are doing deals and see it as expedient to do so. So I don't think that either of the big tech companies involved in all the headlines to date are hurting too badly from the deal.
Our guest here on News Talk is Steve Dempsey of Independent News and Media. Speaking, I suppose, one of the beneficial elements of these deals that are now happening globally, where the platforms are paying something to content providers, is that it may sustain journalists' employment, which is always a good thing, I suppose. But that is an ongoing debate as to how journalists and creators of content, even if they're working on their own, are actually paid by the big tech platforms that use their stuff. And one interesting trend that's beginning to happen is some platforms beginning to pay content providers, journalists, many of them, for newsletters, old-fashioned newsletters online.
Yeah, I've always thought old-fashioned newsletters get a terrible rep. And this is going back to kind of even working, I used to be a copywriter. So, you know, in marketing terms, newsletters are fabulous ways. Now, they may be a bit spammy now. I think we all have inboxes that are full of messages that you don't always read all the time. But it's a direct message from somebody into an environment in your world on your phone or on a screen that you care about. I think they're often overlooked as very powerful methods of communication, and it's certainly de rigueur at the moment for journalists to be sending out newsletters, and a lot of that is on the back of a startup called Substack, which started creating subscription-based email products. So effectively, you and I could decide, Vincent, we wanted to do a kind of a business of a media technology newsletter. We write down our notes on a weekly basis and publish it through their kind of publishing portal. And effectively, it's not just a web CMS, a content management system. It also sends it directly into the inbox of people who are willing to pay for it. So it's a really nice kind of very, you know, that whole great line, there's only two business models, bundling and unbundling. These guys have smartly figured out how to bundle together everything you need to monetize a direct relationship with an audience based on receiving a newsletter. So Substack is this really nice tool that's out there. And of course, as with all really nice online tools that gain traction, what happens? Facebook decides to come calling and to see if they can copy anything that they're doing. They did this very successfully with Snapchat. A lot of the Snapchat features were found very quickly on Instagram and Facebook after they were launched successfully on Snap. So what Facebook is saying now is that it's going to start testing its own newsletter product, which will integrate with Pages and Groups and its overall suite. So it really makes sense because Facebook could be an incredibly powerful way to people to have a relationship, a paid relationship with an audience based on their expertise of a topic. Yeah.
Mm. Interesting one to watch indeed.
But I think the interesting thing is they're going to court writers. I mean, Facebook isn't the only one doing this. Twitter has bought a company called Review that's going to be doing the same thing. For me, the interesting thing is Facebook needs to draw a very careful line. They've been very successfully saying, look, we're not a media company. We're just a bunch of engineers here. If they are doing what they said they do, which is getting writers and courting writers and bringing them onto their platform in very specific areas, it doesn't take long before that can be seen as a word that we would see as commissioning coming from a kind of a media background. So they need to be careful about that they can maintain their stance that they're not an editorial company. And they also, specifically in America, need to make sure they're not falling into the old trap that they can be accused of conservative bias. Because if they get a load of more right-wing or left-wing people writing on their platform, that they may open themselves up to criticism in that area. So it's an interesting one. It's a no-brainer from Facebook. They have the infrastructure to do this right. The question is, do they have the capability to launch a business like this without any more PR missteps, I guess?
And have they given any indication what the payment model might be, Steve? Would it be based on the number of subscribers or people who take on the newsletter, that you're paid per user effectively?
I think Substack, you pay a small portion of your every subscription gets paid to cover the service. So my guess would be that Facebook would need to do something like that, and they would probably be quite competitive because they have the scale, and they would probably be able to offer an awful lot of additional add-ons in terms of analytics and ability to reach lookalike audiences and the type of smart things they can do in their own walled garden about amplifying people's voices.
Finally, Steve, any thoughts at this stage about the recent stepping down of former Guardian editor Alan Rusbridger from the Future of Media Commission here, on the basis that he acknowledged he didn't fully understand or know that his journalist, Roy Greenslade, was a strong supporter of the IRA during his time as editor? Any thoughts on that?
My main thought on it is that I don't really mind one way or the other about any editorial misjudgment we have. I think anyone who's worked in the media has probably made calls like that they might look back on and regret. What I found interesting about his appointment to the Future of Media Commission in the first place was that he, whether rightly or wrongly, I certainly remember him as presiding over a large commercial loss in The Guardian when he was there. Mm-hmm. So while he undoubtedly has huge editorial experience, his commercial nous may not have been the best. He may not have been the best person in terms of commercial chops that they could have found out there. That said, anyone who was in a senior position in media at the time that he was probably did launch a lot of efforts and a lot of innovative new products into the market that the likelihood was they weren't going to make money more due to the market conditions at the time. But still, for me, it really is an opportunity looking forward to try and address some of the criticisms about the commission's makeup. I mean, there's a lot of really smart people obviously involved in the commission, and there's a good gender balance as well, which is to be welcomed. And the chairman, Brian McCraw, I think is a very strong individual. The one thing that I know people like the National Union of Journalists and News Brands both said they were disappointed with the commission's members. And I think the government did address that by bringing on board the deputy editor of the Tuam Herald, I think, to give a bit more editorial background to that. But it still seems to me that it's a group of academics for the most part, and that there's a very specific skill set around being a commercial media operator. And do you know what, even going back to the start of our conversation, Vincent, about Flox and what Google is doing in the online ad space, any media entity going into the future is going to have to understand a few things, that the methods of distribution and how expensive that can be, how to make money on online advertising, because that's always going to be around, and how to make money from a subscription model. These are things I think that all media entities are going to need to struggle with. And I don't see in the makeup of the commission people who have specific skills around digital ads, the technology required to distribute content online, and the technology required to build a subscription offering and to constantly court customers in the same way as the likes of Netflix have done so successfully, and even Disney, which is going to overtake Netflix. These are behemoths coming from without that the local media in Ireland need to be preparing ourselves to take on. And while I'm sure that the an awful lot of the people who are on the Future of the Media Commission have really strong thoughts and have done very good research into that, I don't know if they necessarily have the skills of actually going toe-to-toe with those types of entities.
Perhaps even at this late stage, the Minister and Breon McCrath as chairman might give Steve Dempsey of Independent News and Media a quick buzz. We leave it there. That's Steve Dempsey, Group Director of Publishing Products at Independent News and Media, and a man with a strong commercial outlook. Steve, thanks indeed for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Vincent.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.